Welcome to the Backdrop Untold Stories in Golf. I'm your co-host, Matt Consign, here with our co-host, the professor. Professor, how are you?
Springtime's here. Means it's golf season. Also mean it is allergy season. So that is full effect. Just constant headache.
You sound a little bit of congestion there.
Yeah, constant headache, constant runny nose, constant tickle in the throat. I got to tell you, what did the actually full-on testing last year where they poke your arm with 2 billion different things. And the findings were, I was really hoping they'd be like, you're allergic to cats and here's your medicine. Nah, it's basically you're allergic to golf courses. This is the verdict of it.
What's so different in the South, I think, than up North here with our us Yankees versus you guys is you can't see the pollen as well up here. I know it's in the air. You hear about the pollen count, but when you're in Georgia, you literally see the pollen blowing into your face. All the cars are covered with it. It's no joke. Like when Tiger talks about, he's got to start taking his meds in February to get ready for Augusta. It's real. I got crushed early this year. So I'm hoping that when I get down for the spring meeting, the week that this is airing, I believe the spring meeting is this week. There's been years where I can't even see down there because I got so much red eyes and water coming out of my face. But take your allergy meds, folks, if you're coming down for the spring meeting. What do you take? You probably take a whole cocktail of medication.
You know, for a while I haven't taken anything. Then this last year I finally got on a nasal spray, a prescription one. That worked decently well last year, but this year, not as great. So next year I'll probably try steroids, hit them up.
just make the
jump. Yeah, that January, February, just start a steroid regimen each year to get through. You know, it's about the end of April. It starts down here in Athens. It lets up, but yeah,
if you're out of nowhere, start out driving me. I'm not afraid to piss test you, Professor. I'll get you a peeing in a cup and send it to the USGA. Hey, there's a lot going on. I guess first, I just before we dive into our show here, I wanted to thank everybody for listening. This pod and the community, this is an extension of New Club Golf Society. I think some listeners might forget that, but thanks everybody for listening. It makes it so much more fun for the professor and I to share the dialogue with you guys. So the backdrop at newclub.golf is the email. If you do have suggestions on future shows or you just want to send us some stories, please do. You can send it at thebackdrop@newclub.golf. Also, give us a follow and subscribe on your favorite podcast listening app or wherever you listen to this show. That stuff goes a long way to helping us kind of get more people involved. And then, there's so much happening with New Club this right now, Kevin. It's I think the last week of April here, we're going into the spring meeting this week at Sweetens Cove, 2 days of that, stops at Lookout, stops at Black Creek. So pumped for everybody coming down for that. Another sellout, another full field event at Sweetens Cove, which is no surprise. And then we just dropped registration for the Summer Medal at Sand Valley. Oof, which
special.
Boy, oh boy, are folks excited for that. People are very excited to get back there and see Lido and Sedge Valley, the new additions there.
Are you sleeping at all right now?
And I don't need sleep. No.
I mean, honestly,
in the wintertime, it's tough to be sleep deprived. In the spring and summer, I actually feel like I need less sleep, as weird as that sounds. I think I get more energy from the golf that's happening and things that are occurring. But who needs that? We do have, local chapter stuff, just real quick. City versus Suburbs, open right now. That's happening May 18th at Jackson Park in South Shore on the coast of Lake Michigan, one of the most underappreciated golf experiences, I think, in Chicago is a afternoon at Jackson Park. And then we got our friends from Titleist doing a fitting for our members this year. So that's out at the Preserve on May 15th. Excited for them to all this stuff you and I have been able to go through and talk about. Now we're going to start rolling that out to our members from our friends at Titleist. And then Atlanta, we got the Hooch going back to Chattahoochee Golf Club. And that registration is open right now. It's June 8th, it's happening. So
what a great spot for that too. Love Chattahoochee.
So much going on. I want to just dive into our show. Thanks to our friends for Titleist for supporting the show, for supporting New Club. Be on the lookout if you're a member of New Club for those fittings from their SureFit experts. The professor and I were able to go through that and excited for other people too as well. But thank you to Titleist and Professor. Let's get on to the show.
We got to do fact of the day, man. You skipping over that?
This is the show. So on to the show means now we're into the customs of New Club, the Bag Drop Podcast. What educational material do you want to share?
Well, I want to drive back to Tyler's real quick, because I finally got the Sweetens Cove with the new wedges with the SM10s I got fitted into. And I'm just going to, I'm not blowing smoke when I was talking about what John did with me in terms of like identifying, yeah, your technique's not a problem. Because I went up there on sticky Bermuda, muddy stuff and was able to hit some shots I haven't been able to hit up there ever. So if I ever get the rest of my game back in tune, not sure when that's going to happen, but if it does, I am very excited about playing golf up there and maybe going for some low scores.
I can't wait to see it, because he made a very talented wedge player even better is what it sounds like. So I want to get fit with John myself. I mean, all the sure fit guys. So my only hesitation with John is if I do it when I'm down in Georgia, am I, you know, the turf, one big question is just the grass. And if I'm playing majority of my rounds on northern bent grass, should I be fitted there? He'll probably say yes. So I'm getting around to it. But just a quick shout out to their app. Like, nothing replaces an in-person fitting on these wedges is what you and I kind of figured out from our conversation with John and Aaron Dill. But the app is, have you used it?
I played with it a little bit, yeah. It was impressive. Dude,
very cool. Like a different... I don't think they call it AI particularly, but just a different way to get a level closer to that in-person fitting and maybe, you know, see what pops up. Download the app, their SureFit, Titleist Fitting app. Check it out.
That's right.
What's your fun fact?
Yeah, quick one so we can get on with the show.
I want to rebrand the fun fact, by the way.
Hashtag branding.
Well, it's because sometimes it's not fun. Sometimes it's really serious. Sometimes it's like you hit us with like heavy, heavy shit sometimes. And I'm like, well, Professor, I didn't want to question my existence this morning. You know, what's fun in that? But I think it should be,
this one's more
to be
fun.
Coined the professor's something. But anyways, what is the fun fact?
So this one's definitely a little bit more fun. I'm always fascinated with how the brain works. And this one's in the world of vision. And one of the things we do with vision is we presume or often think like it's just taking in the world around us as if it's just whatever's out there, we see it exactly as it is, right? That's not at all how vision works. And there's tons of science behind vision, tons of research. It's fun to go just dabble and read about because of how subjective our vision is and the way our brain processes what we receive on our retina. But one of the coolest things is we actually are always seeing our nose, except our brain filters it out. Because the brain is always processing information, that becomes something that doesn't, it's like, no, that's inconsequential. We don't need to think about it. So your nose is actually always in your field of vision, but you don't ever see it because your brain's just not processing. It's essentially processing it out. So something kind of cool, right? When you look forward, yeah, you don't see your nose, but actually it is being received on your retina. Your brain just like, it's like, I'm going to ignore that and I'm not going to pay attention to it.
Whoa. So it chooses what it wants to see.
Yeah, precisely. That's an adaptive evolutionary trait of, you know, our brain and how it processes senses. If you think about if it was paying attention to everything you're receiving at all times, I mean, that's a huge cognitive load. So the brain is, has evolved to be very selective in what it processes and what it picks up on.
That's like, the people do say you can't always trust your eyes.
Yeah.
Trust your eye, right?
Yeah.
I know I went through that with fittings, honestly, putter fittings too. It's like, yeah, I know you think that's square, but look at what the laser is pointing at.
Precisely.
That's interesting.
Yep. I mean, how you see is learned, right? What you see is learned. So.
Ooh. Cool. That is fun. Thank you, Professor. So the question today to transition us, we don't talk pro golf on this show very often for maybe obvious reasons, but you and I were having kind of a text conversation and it spurred, well, maybe we should talk about this on the podcast. But, more than ever, I guess we've seen ratings for pro golf are tanking. They're in the dumpster. But playing your own golf is at an all-time high. And you and I also, through Netflix and the pandemic and other things, became motorsport fans, specifically F1. So I think you were more into the fandom maybe or aware of it before that. I'm definitely one of the Netflix 40 million converts to F1 in America. But I think the question you and I were just kind of kicking around in a text was, should elite golf, the best golfers in the world, should elite golf look like elite motor racing? And I don't know, it was an interesting, we both kind of had different takes. So I wanted to open that question up to you and kind of talk about the, maybe a little bit of the state of pro golf, but more so like, what should it be? Inevitably, what is this going to, who cares about the noise right now? But like beyond the current live PGA Tour battle, like what should elite golf look like?
Yeah. And let's be clear too, I am still pretty much a cliche F1 fan. That's not go too deep in terms of my fandom, in terms of pre-COVID and Drive to Survive. Certainly, I was always a NASCAR fan and did follow F1 tangentially, but Claire and I, we definitely deep dove F1 in terms of the Drive to Survive and hook us with the soap opera. And now we've only watched, I think, the first two seasons of Drive to Survive, and everything we've consumed in F1 has been deeper into the sport, attending it, reading podcasts, that sort of stuff. But yeah, I don't know. Here's where I want to start. Like, I'm going to say this, any pro sport, to you, what is the purpose of pro sports? Or what are the purposes of pro sports to you? Like, if you had to generalize that in the biggest picture possible, why do pro sports exist?
Yeah, I mean, looking at just the history of professionalism, it was always associated with like, well, we don't want to just, like, people are entertained by it. You know, it's an entertainment product. So I would say that's probably from a, you know, we always talk about different incentives, and in capitalism, making money is an incentive. So entertainment products make money. And so I don't want to say that's like the purpose of it, because if you want to go a 180 and talk about the deeper thing of it, I think pro sports is like just all of us together, typically live, watching greatness. Yeah. And how awe-inspiring that is, right? Is that when we all tune in at the same time, it's like live any sport, I guess, is still one of those things that connects us by communities. Whether we're watching the Cleveland Browns or we're watching the Chicago Blackhawks or wherever your community is, or the Atlanta Falcons, you at that time are all watching something great occur, saying, wow, that catch was the best catch, or that three-pointer at the buzzer was the coolest moment that we all got to share at the same time. So I feel like that's maybe the purpose of it, is it gives society and communities something to all connect on. But if my cynical brain is turned on and we're talking about just making money, the purpose is to entertain and to make a boatload of money for investors.
Yeah, I think like you've already touched on a difficult balance in any competitive sport when we talk about pro sports, is that, I'll take it straight to golf. Like, on one end, we could say the only thing we value is a meritocracy based on performance. That's it, right? If it makes money, if it doesn't make money, we don't care. We just want something that where you perform well, and let's take it as an individual versus team. We'll get to that. But like we say, that's all we care about. We want to create a competitive environment, and who cares if there's one eye on it or a billion eyes on it? We want that versus, yeah. And I know Mark speaks very passionately and elegantly about, no, sports are an entertainment product. Like, that's really why they're there. I agree, like, they exist more in that role than they do in this meritocracy. Who's the best person to do this particular skill in whatever sport it is? I do believe, like, pro sports exist more for the entertainment. Like you said, it's about pulling people together, pulling fans together. Greatness, right? And watching greatness. Do you like watching, like, perfection? Like, think about the Patriots, right? Hated team, but they're going for perfection. Were you rooting for the Patriots isn't the right thing, but tuning in and like, kind of like, I want to see it. Do you get like that with greatness?
I'm not, football's a bad example for me personally, because, you know, I support my Browns, but I don't really get into football. Michael Jordan.
Yeah.
In his hate, like as a kid.
Hate him as a Cav fan, but yet.
my family just loved, you know, we were Cavs fan. He broke Craig Ehlers. So my family just disliked, but I've always been pulled to greatness. So Tiger, Michael Jordan, Roger Federer. So yes, I would, to answer your question, I do tune in for that perfection to see like, oh my God, what is he doing that's so different? Like he can't be beat. Why is that? I mean, I love trying to figure that out. But as a fan, I'm usually rooting against him. Yeah. I like to root against those guys because I want an underdog story. I think most of us view ourselves as underdogs. And so you tune in for that because as good as Michael Jordan was, as good as Tiger Woods was, they could still be beat. You know, Craig Elo could have made that shot. Yang could have easily held him off, you know?
Yeah.
Or actually, I think Y.E. Yang.
He did hold him off.
He did. Yeah. He did.
Bob May, maybe. You know, Bob May could have.
Bob May did not. But yeah, that's those stories is why I tune in.
Yeah. I think like greatness brings us in for both those reasons, right? For like Patriots are always the example for me because I always root against the Patriots, viciously root against them. But that perfect season, once they got to the Super Bowl, it's like, wow, to see perfection. So I was actually in that Super Bowl rooting for them because I just wanted to be like, I got to witness the perfect season. And I got to see a team pull together and do that. And so both ways, greatness does that for us as a fan, right? It like makes us root against something, be invested in that, or root for something, especially when it's our own team. As a footnote, we don't go in this route, but I think that's why technology in golf is such a big deal too. Like, so greatness is defined by comparing it to previous generations and previous teams, right? That is how you define greatness. Without that, you have no greatness because you can't define greatness based on the current crop. It's always in comparison to previous entities. But that's a conversation for another day. But I think like the greatness aspect is, let's go now to that question you asked. Should it be more like F1 motorsports? Right now, pro golf is in a growing pain. They are. They're lost. They don't know what they are, right? They're fractured. Maybe it goes to team golf, maybe not. Whatever happens next is still going to be a growing pain. So I think the next 10 years are meaningless in terms of the conversation we're having. I think what ultimately matters is, do we create a sport product in which greatness is a thing as a fan? Is there something we attach to as a fan that also has elements of comparison to greatness? Why did we love Tiger in 2019, right? Why was everybody tuned in there? Why was everybody tuned in to Phil at Kiowa? But yet, when Padraig won those majors, you know, nobody was, and I love Padraig, right? But that's not going to pull the same thing, right? Like, so I think the question becomes, could a team element in the long term, because I think at F1 Motorsports, that's one of the big differences is there's this team element. It is about the individual drivers, but they exist within team. There's so much attention to that. The sport is built on a team model internally, the way that the companies function. Could the team model in golf breed more of what pulls us in as a fan?
Yeah, I think the answer is actually yes. And so one of my beliefs from the get-go was, like the get-go meaning this separation in the game of golf, this division, this, you know, turf war between LIV and PGA Tour. I think that team golf is an inevitability for the entertainment product and just the financial model. I don't know, like, again, back to your greatness, meritocracy, like there's maybe a case to be made that if that's the pursuit of the tour and the product, the world tour that comes together, it's not going to be as lucrative as what we see with the team model. And I don't know, that comes from Premier League soccer. That comes from the NFL. That comes from all these things. And I think the PGA Tour actually knows that. And if you look at that TGL blunder and how freaking silly, I mean, even the players are in on what a joke that was. And no one picks on that. Everyone picks on LIV, but I think they're one and the same when it comes to these stupid team names and these things. But I think it's the recognition of that model, and it's going to end up in a team world. I think it is, because what you said, as a fan and a consumer of watching golf, I can get my head around this team of four all players that I know and I know well, household names, just like F1's become, right? You could, right now, I could ask you and you would list all 20 people on the grid for F1. Golf, the superstars make the money. Everyone knows that. That's why the PIP has existed. You know, all this stuff. So it has to be an environment where the best of the best play together. And it has to be an environment where those teams become valuable and big. Google starts buying up, you know, a squad and sponsorships and cities are represented. And so I've long thought that team golf is an inevitability. My hope, because I know that's not for the purest golf fans out there. They think that's bullshit. They don't want to see that in their game. My hope is that the PGA Tour sub-leagues, you know, maybe it's Korn Ferry, maybe it's the actual tour that goes around to the stops. My hope is that becomes more of a relegation type meritocracy that opens the door to being on this team, to becoming a household name, to making the big bucks. But they got a long way to go for that. I just think it's an inevitability that, yeah, we're going to have team golf. That's where it's all headed.
Do you... So I'm going to give a nod of that to Liv because I think they've done this better, or at least they said it better. Let's go back to the TGL or PGL.
TGL, yeah.
Right? Yeah, they're attaching
it which is rumored to be Tiger Golf League.
They're attaching Golf League. They're attaching to cities, right? Like that's far. Do you think that works in golf?
I do. I think it works in life, right? Like you and I moved away, but we still root for the Cleveland Browns and the Cleveland Indians and Guardians and the Cleveland Cavs because. That's what we grew up with, right?
So yeah. What I would challenge is how does a golf team become an entity of the community? Like no home course. No, like there's a home stadium, right? Like how does it become? Because like teams that are attached to their cities, there's an identity with them, right? There's a location with them. Players that don't matter much that come through, right? It's always the team. That's where the attachment is. So what is that fixed entity in golf that people attach to?
I think the course could have a lot to do with it. I mean, but that doesn't that happen in other sports too, man? Like when a franchise team opens up, there's no homegrown players playing for the Jacksonville Jaguars.
But they live there. They exist there. They play there. They are a part of the community through the team, right? Like
That's true.
And in soccer, yeah. That's the way, right? Like the community owns the team, even if it's a private ownership. Like there's a fence of ownership. I wonder, just because it's golf in its nature in terms of its relationship with society, and I'm talking uniquely to the United States here, right? If we're in Scotland, this might be a totally different conversation in terms of their relationship. I'm thinking in the United States, like, okay, even if they have the home course, Wingfoot, New York, that's their home course. It's not the same as a stadium. The guy that's getting the trash every morning for you, right, around the community, he can go in that stadium and watch. He can go to the New York Knicks game, sit up a rafters and watch, right? Like there's some access there. Golf doesn't have that. And that's where I wonder, like, I think F1's a great comparison there. And that's where I think F1's a great comparison in that, like, it's an elite sport. And I'm speaking specific to the United States right now. It's an elite sport. F1's the lead of the elite. And then this is where I wonder, like, Liv with just going to straight teams, right? And not maybe having a community identity. Yeah, I agree with you completely. If you can get the community thing to work, the city thing to work, that's beautiful. That's strong, powerful. That can last forever. There's just so much potential there. But I wonder in golf how realistic that is to pull off. Or just there's a lot to pull off there that other sports, don't have to worry about that golf will have to fight against.
You're right. Because let's talk about F1 setup, right? And the fact that what's Alpine has two French drivers and... That's the connection that the community would have with their team from their country. Ferrari races once a year at Monza, and that's their kind of home race, if you will. But it's not like, you know, there's it is a stadium per se, but it's like one, it's only once a year. It's not, you know, 16 weeks a year like the NFL. So or eight weeks a year.
And that stadium is very willing to bring in hundreds of thousands of people across every social class, open their grounds and let them come in and consume, right? Like,
well, I will not buy the argument that that F1 is this open egalitarian society. Like, it is elite pouring through their pores.
For the fans, like, right, like Silverstone. Right? I mean, granted, F1's starting to charge more, sure. But still, Silverstone, like, when I was there, like, and I rode a bus to Silverstone, the people going in that are across every social class, right? And yeah. You don't see that at golf tournaments. Like, we're a long ways away from that for a lot of reasons. That's not just on golf's fault. That's just the way golf is situated within society is propagates that.
Yeah, and I wouldn't know. I've not been to an F1 in-person race. I will be going to my first LIV Golf event this year, as ashamed as I am to admit that.
That's just doing your research, right?
I am the
Nashville event, so, right? That's we're gonna look out. You know, you.
I'll be in Nashville.
You're gonna be
there for a bachelor party, which I think is so appropriate for LIV. Right, it's my brother's get married. I'm the best man, and it's a sports themed bachelor party in Nashville. And so we're going to a minor league baseball game. We're going to a professional soccer game, the Nashville whatever they are, and then we're going to LIV Golf the same weekend. So it's all sports all weekend. But I can't lie. I'm so curious. I want to see what you said. What is the makeup of this fan base for this type of event, you know, live music and stuff. So I will report back after that. But back to F1, I think the one thing I don't want to see pro golf, again, I think it's inevitable that we're going to end up in more of an F1 type of world tour arrangement for sure. The elitism of the game, I think, also fuels that. You mentioned technology. There's some technology comparisons between golf and F1 you could definitely make. I don't love that either. But the thing that I really don't like about F1 is how large the barriers are to crack in. I don't think you have good, you have underdog stories like someone in the midfield, you know, trying to just took away a win from Max Verstappen. That's a great underdog story. But I don't think you have like the life arc. People always say, oh, you know, Lewis Hamilton was a kid from nothing. The one guy, Lawson, who's racing for, you know, he's kind of a working class kid that made it, but not even like that's one, you know? And I just, what I want to see is, does the tour give opportunities for the Joel Damons of the world, right? Mm-hmm. Does the tour, this world tour, have a very clear thing that us really nerdy fans, like if you're just watching Netflix and getting into golf, and you're watching this world tour compete, you know, around the world for whatever it is, 16 weeks a year, and then you tune in for the majors, like that's cool. But I hope the product that for us sickos that are like, you know, man, this guy is really showing off his stuff, when he's going to get his break, that there's some type of promotion and relegation that occurs. And I think that's what's so fascinating to me about the Premier League structure, mm-hmm. and the Champions League and European soccer, is that they have that, and fan bases are rabid at those lower levels because it almost means more than the top level. Do you know what I mean? Like, I feel like that's something that we even miss in our professional sports in the US. I mean, nobody's going to, you know, Akron Rubber Ducks games, you know, with a rooting interest. They're there for a nice hot dog and a ice cream on a summer afternoon. But I would love to see it matter even more at those lower levels of meritocracy. And wow, this kid has been playing great for 3 months, and he just took a spot away from Dustin Johnson on that team. And now let's see what he can do. And I think that is truly compelling. And talk about an entertainment product. You can make a ton of money off that.
I mean, yeah, I think there's a rural, this would be, I don't know how, very complex to pull off. But I mean, again, this is all long-term thinking. Like, it's put a process in place and you just trust in 25 years, it's going to be at a different product with different structure. Like, imagine that's, you know, borrow somewhere from the F1 model where that top team level is a very limited number of people. You know, maybe it's 20 teams of three players, no more than that, 10 teams of four players or something where it's very upper elite. Like, you're supposed to be the best of the best. Now you're in this team format playing for big money because they're going to need to have that for sure across the world. Like you said, maybe it's 16 events, whatever it is. It's, you know, it's a very limited scarcity thing, right? Where you want to tune in because, wow, you only see this occur so many times a year, whatever. Then the majors are a meritocracy, still individual thing, right? And that plays into those teams are watching, okay, yeah, I got my guys at the majors. So that's still a narrative at the majors. Like, who, what's team? It's not a team event, but like you're paying attention, like, oh, that team had five guys. They get to strut around now. And that's still going to matter at some level, right? But then there's a meritocracy in that, okay, there's this guy, you know, the major fields are still, you know, somewhere between 70 at the low end with the Masters all the way up to 100 and whatever. Well, this guy that's not on a team, he just finished top three in three of the majors last year, right? Like, yeah. So now teams are going to be looking at him. And again, world golf rankings are going to have to get sorted out. Like, what are they going to do? Are they rankings maybe go away completely? And it is just a team. The teams are like, owners like, oh, I want that kid. He's been doing well. So bye, DJ. You haven't been performing for me. We're paying you all this money. We're kicking you off. Your contract's done. You're back down playing on the PGA Tour, whatever that tour is called. Now, I'm getting in trouble right away with my PGA Tour friends right here, because whatever that tour becomes is now going to be second fiddle to this team, this new tier that got created. That's the team upper elite playing for billions of dollars, yada, yada, yada. Huge contracts, hey, like soccer level contracts, whatever.
What I tell your friends, yeah. What I tell your friends at PGA Tour that are also my friends is that they're going to own some of that, yeah. Right? I don't think there's it. So right. Get over it. Like, if it is the, is it, if it were, it's where it ends up, they own some of it. Anyways, continue.
Yeah, so then the PGA Tour, whatever it is called, becomes probably a much more localized tour, like almost entirely within the United States or whatever its barriers are. And it is just another way to like give people places to play, to show themselves, where a team owner looks at like that tour, whatever it is, and says, wow, that guy's been killing it. My guy here that I'm, you know, we have a contract with Motorola and getting this much money, he's not worth a dang anymore. Sorry, buddy, you're gone. Your contract's done. I'm going to give this kid a chance, pull him up for 3 weeks. Like, okay, next four team tournaments, you're our three spot, right? Let's see what you got. Like, there is a really cool structure that could be, it'd be completely different than what we see now, entirely different. But man, that could be fun for exactly what you said, is like the golf nerds could nerd out on the movement of players and whatever. And then if they do it right at the top level, people across the world identify with teams. I'm not smart enough to figure out how that team structure needs to be, where the people are going to identify with a team, right? And really attach to something, because I think that's the model that works best, not attaching to a player, attached to a team. Yeah. And that's where I go back to what I asked you earlier. I'm not sure cities are the right answer. I'm also not sure they aren't the right answer. I have no strong opinion on what the right model is, but I think that's the biggest thing that's going to have to get figured out.
Yeah. Yeah, wow. It's,
like, I'd be pumped. Like, I haven't watched pro golf. I finally watched, you know, Sean Martin. Shout out to him, got me to watch the players, and it was a blast. I watched a little bit the week after. So I haven't been watching pro golf at all, and just this conversation is like, wow, I'd be excited to have a system like that in place if it was done right.
And I think, yeah, done right's a whole nother story, but it's, I think the other thing with those sub-tier leagues, and everyone talks about like, well, the sponsors aren't there if Tiger's not there, or if Scottie Scheffler's not playing, or Rory McIlroy. But like, you look at Premier League or these you know, structures that have good sub leagues, League One still has big dollars in their sponsorships. Yeah, Messi's not playing, but they sure do, you know? Yeah. Like, so I'll get like, here's for a little bit of the purist in there. I know a lot of guys that listen to this show that grew up going to the World Series of Golf at Firestone Country Club in Akron, Ohio, or maybe you're a big fan of the Sanderson Farms.
Yeah, that's right.
Memphis. Like the community golf tournaments are dying. You know, they're the those
You're right.
And you and I grew up going to that at NEC, and we knew what it did for the community, both in charitable dollars, highlighting our, you know, championship golf course that we all aspire to play, volunteering and being able to carry signs for Fred Couples. Like, that stuff is huge to develop. I bet you I would not be, you know, running a golf company if it weren't for that tournament, just instilling in me these aspirational ideals around the game of golf. I think that stuff's huge. And you talk about, you know, these big, these events that are moving towards the bigger markets, they're moving out of these small markets. Maybe it opens up an opportunity for, you know, I know now it's a senior tour event, specifically in Akron, but there's still a bunch of big dollars being thrown at it from Bridgestone and colleague companies and these other companies that they see that value locally where their employees work and all that stuff. So it's like, it's almost like return to that golden age of the PGA Tour, which was like 50s, 60s, guys driving around in their cars, being a part of the local communities, raising money for charities. Like, we know that's dying because it has to, in terms of the financial model of what's going to be successful, you know, the arms race for the professional golf. But just imagine that we get the best of both worlds in what you and I think are talking about, which is the global tour, team golf, franchises, only household names, and then the meritocracy of a traveling tour that guys have to fight tooth and nail to get their chance. And the other fast track is you play well in majors and you get your spot.
Get pulled
and,
up, yep.
You know, Lee Westwood, love you, buddy, but your game stinks. You're off the, you're off this team. And that has to be a part of this as well, where there has to be some, you know, world rankings, I think, will also die. Yeah, I just don't. I think you're so right, Kevin. Like, is there and let's go back to F1. Is there a driver ranking that people even put any credibility into?
Like, I mean, they get point, like, you have to get certain qualification points to be able to move up to like F2 and F1 and all that, right? Based on your performance. And I forget the other, like, what all goes into, like, oh, yeah, you've accumulated enough. I even forget they're called points, but you can be a driver here. They do have something like that, right? Like, you can't just be like some Joe Schmo off the streets and get thrown an F1 car just because you're talented, right? You have to show some capabilities. But yeah, in terms of like world rankings, it's not like, oh, Max Verstappen, he's the number one driver, and this guy in F2 is the number 12 driver, even though he's in F2. Like, that's not really a thing that, you know, people are gonna, that that's formalized or anything.
Yeah, and so I just think it's gonna fall on these teams in this future state of elite professional golf. Of, you know what, we're not doing that great as a team. And have you seen this kid, how he's playing?
Let's pull him
up. I think he's available. I think we can get Nick Dunlop to fill our spot. We're going to have to make a tough call. We're moving Phil Mickelson off the team. You know, like, I just see that.
We're going to roll the dice and get him ways because we think he's going to develop, right? Like, we're going to put him in at our 3 or 4 spot. And
You
know, he's going to be stud in 2 years. Like, he's going to be the number one golfer in this tour.
Yeah. And then the whole modern marketing content engine builds those stories. And I remember talking to one guy at the PGA Tour that before all this was happening, that's what they were actually getting ready to really focus on, is how do we build stars quicker? How do people learn? And that's what PGA Tour U was all about, right? Mm-hmm. That they were going to introduce the world to elite college golfers before they were professionals, so that when they got ANWA is all this as well. Everyone kind of gives the Masters a little bit of grief because they didn't make a professional equivalent. But part of the discussion was maybe for the game of golf, us highlighting elite amateur golfers before they're professional will build interest in the women's game, which I think stats have shown that that has actually worked. So I think they were on that path, but then LIV Golf just blew everything up and guys are, you know, now they're worried about, oh, shoot. We got to make sure that John Rahm doesn't drop and all that stuff. So, but if I think there is a path back to that where it's really embrace the elite amateurs, that's embrace collegiate golfers, that's start to tell their stories earlier, so that once they show up, the everyday fan is going to be like, oh, I've heard of that name. Oh yeah, I think that. So they're not pissed off that that person's replacing Phil Mickelson. They're more intrigued that, wow, they just bumped, you know, one of the best golfers in the world off a roster.
Yeah. That something you said also spurred on an idea too. Like, I think one of the things golf that what we're talking about, again, we're, to be clear, this is a statement from the perspective as golf as entertainment. So I don't necessarily like this as golf as meritocracy. Golf is a competitive pursuit of showing skill and identifying the most skilled person through a tournament as we currently do it.
We got the measures for that though.
Yeah. And I think golf's going to have to, this form of golf we're talking about, is going to have to seriously consider what are the formats of the events. Because here's the thing, a lot of other sports, let's keep it in F1 context just because that's been our motivator and our comparison through most of this. F1's awesome. Practice one, boom. Who's the fastest? What's going on? Where's the sectors, right? Practice two, okay, we'll have the sector changes. What are they? Oh, they mess with the tire. Practice three, all right, where are they at? Okay, the car's really starting to get dialed in. We kind of have an idea. Boom, qualifying. Qualifying's huge. Like attending qualifying at Silverstone, like people are crazy, right? And there's an outcome right then, already a competition in a competition. Then boom, you got your main thing at the end of the day, right? Golf does not have that. The PGA Tour, I don't know if they've tried or not. They can't even get the cut to be a big thing, right? Like, so the LIV, like, I think that's one of the things LIV has failed at. Like, I think they had an opportunity to bring in a brand new format where each day matters. Because you think from a team perspective, man, 3 to 4 days is a slow drip for the average fan. Like you said, the everyday fan is a one-day fan. Like, they need something that day that matters the most. Like, even in a 7-game series, each game matters, right? There's an elation or a loss. Like, that matters day after day. And think of all the major sports in terms of entertainment. Soccer. Match. 90 minutes. Boom. Done. Clear, defined thing. That end result matters immediately, permanently. Versus golf, yeah, your round one matters, but it's not a permanent matter. You can fix it, right? Like, it's, my wife has a funny thing about basketball. She's like, none of it matters until the last 3 minutes. That's why I don't like basketball. Now, obviously, I'm like, every sport's kind of like that, but I get her point. Like,
yeah, I get her point.
There's all this scoring, and it always almost comes down to the last 3 or 4 minutes. So, like, all that actually was pretty inconsequential because there's so much scoring involved that, yeah, like, oh, they went on an 8-1-0 run in the first 2 minutes of the game. Well, that means nothing. And she has a point there, right?
Yeah.
So I think, like, golf, maybe they got to figure out this team thing, how to make things matter more often.
Yeah, I this is real off the cuff just thinking about that because I'll admit I've probably watched more LIV golf than most golf fans. I am curious as hell about specifically format. Mm-hmm. Like, I remember watching the early days of LIV and being like, all right, some of these guys stink.
But early on they did.
Oh, you could just tell, like with the one tournament I remember Charles Schwartzel winning, and I was like, I know I couldn't have beat Charles Schwartzel, but I'm pretty sure like 75% of the field this, or of a PGA Tour field, could have beat Charles Schwartzel this week. So that's not the case anymore, flat out. But they still got some stinkers for sure. But a lot of John Rahm, Brooks Koepka, these guys can play. Mm-hmm. Cam Smith. But what I was going with that was just the format. Yeah, I think. Listen, just from a startup standpoint, like, I immediately recognized that a different format was like, huh, there is untapped potential in just thinking differently, which is the truth of every industry,
everything.
Right?
Yep.
So the fact that they did that shotgun, the fact that they did,
which I think,
you know,
good idea.
The yeah. And then when it got to the playoffs, the first one at, I think it was Doral or something, I did tune in for that. It was exciting. You can't, like, it was coming down to the wire. Every match counted.
Yeah.
You're watching, what's his name? Pat Perez just trying to break 74 so the four aces don't lose. Like, that was actually super compelling to me because he was just like pushing everything to the right. And he's just trying to hang in there and he's getting up and down. And so, like, that was interesting to me. And it opened my eyes to the team concept of, mm-hmm. okay, every player contributing has some appeal here where you can't just, you know, there's pressure on them to not be the dud on your squad. But to your point, you have to have the immediate payoff for a fan, I think. And so, I don't know, my adjustment is this: 4-day event, 2-day stroke play, teams are cut. No individual component, teams are cut. 2 days of match play. You're seeded based on your stroke play, 2 days of match play. I know the TV, everyone brings up TV and match play, that it doesn't work. When you have four guys playing four guys,
yeah, your probability increases.
Constant action.
Yeah.
And you and but it's still not overwhelming. Like, I don't know if anyone's watched the beginning of the singles of the Ryder Cup when things when everyone's on the course, it's a bit disorienting. You can't actually keep track of every single thing, but you can keep track of a leaderboard that has a team that's up, a team that's down. Now let's dig in and see who's winning what individual match. I think that works. Yeah. I think you don't have to look any further than the Ryder Cup to see that the ratings are fantastic. Now you have patriotism and all the other factors that go into that. But that's my gut, without giving it a lot of thought, is 2 days of match play, an actual cut. That's just imagine if there was a team cut and let's go with the Bullfrogs. We'll switch from LIV to the TGL. Adam Scott, Rory McIlroy, I think Tyrell Hatton was on that team, Keegan Bradley, and whoever their fourth is. Let's just say they have like 4 weeks in a row of the 2 days of stroke play. They're not making match play. Mm-hmm. Everyone's going to be talking about like, what's going on with the Bullfrogs? Why, when are they going to dump Keegan? Keegan has shot 75, lowered 75 in his last four attempts. That to me is kind of really interesting and different. And yeah, there's no way to world rank that. But again, my belief is the world rankings are dead for the elite golfers. No one's going to care. Everyone's going to know that they earned it. They got to that point because they were major champions, because they won everything on those meritocracy, lower level leagues.
Right.
But now they're here until they're not. And when they're there, it's just either do you beat the guys you're playing or don't you? And that's what you see in F1, right? Is that
either beat him.
Everyone loves Daniel Ricciardo, but if he can't beat nobody, he's not going to have a seat on the grid.
Yeah. Yeah, that's interesting. I think the point there too is like, I agree, again, the echo the world ranking thing. And to be clear, a lot of this conversation and my points go against what I would like to see. Like, I'm a golf purist in the sense of I hope the amateur game never changes relative to some of these things, right? Have that slow drip, have that long tournament where the skill set gets pulled out. Like, leader gets to tee off last. That's the benefit of, you leading after 3 days. Like, all of that I love. But man, like, from an entertainment standpoint, the shotgun start, those sorts of things are great. Whatever this format looks like, get creative with the match play, right? Does it have to be 18-hole matches, right? Does it look like something else? You assign a point value to your player that's going out there, right? You got four guys going out. Well, you're my four player. You're my three player too. That's a point value for the match, right? So there's matches that carry more points within them. Mm-hmm. Talk about like creating some interesting team dynamics where like you keep getting thrown out of the four, but you get beat every time. Stuff like that. I think there's some real potential to do. What I would be interested in, what made me think is like a counterpoint to the slow drip. Cricket's really important. Viewed largely, and I know that might
Rory brings that up a lot, that the cricket.
Yeah, that might be explained by just a cultural background of cricket in terms of people's love for it. But I'd be interested to know, like, that's a lot of cricket, from what I understand. Maybe not, I don't know if lots are the right word, but a standard cricket game can occur over a week or 5 days or 4 days, and it's huge points. So I wonder, what is that actually? I don't know what that actually looks like in terms of fandom, who supports who, how many eyes are actually on it. Is it just a numbers game because the countries are so big that play cricket? So it's actually not, it is just a cultural artifact that gets so many eyes on it. It's actually not tied to the sport, things about the sport itself. It's just, hey, I was raised to watch it. I'd be really interested to know, like, is there anything to be learned from them on how they balance that? I'm not even that knowledgeable in terms of how the match goes to know. And do they have like, I know they have innings or whatever, but is there any meaning to those other than they score a lot of points and they contribute to the overall score? Clueless on that, but I'd be interested to know what they do to that something that lasts over multiple days be interesting to their fans.
Well, I think that's part of it, though, is the one Super Six or something that they call it, the one that Rory always brings up in reference of structure that could work. They didn't do the multiple day thing. They shortened it so that fans can consume it quicker, understand it. It's like, it's still long, but it's just a day match instead of like a 4 day match or whatever. I don't know the answer to that. I'd like to see more of that. I guess like as we wrap up, what does it matter? Does this stuff like, I've been watching pro golf my entire life, and I've definitely consumed so much less this year and last year. And I tune in as a novelty and not as a fan, if that, like, I'm more analyzing than I am just enjoying. And I guess it's like, does this stuff matter at all for the broader game?
Yeah, I think, you know, it's a cherry on top for most of us, right, in terms of the game. And that's what pro golf serves. You know, it's interesting when it's interesting. It's not when it's not. It's fun to watch competition. It's just a sport. So in that way, it's just a sport and it's fun to watch when, like, the Masters and greatness and those things occur. I would say, you know, where I would argue that it might actually matter is for, like, that kid that's just getting into the game. I don't think pro golf actually brings kids into the game from... They have no relationship, and all of a sudden they have a relationship because of pro golf. I don't think that. I think that's a very small minority, that there were a kid that's never touched a golf club is watching TV and is like, oh, I'm going to go do that thing I see. Like,
especially as boring as it is right now.
Yeah. Kids. The onboarding is certainly through a parental figure, a friend, someone in the community. But then what I will say is, like, once someone gets that, they just entered the game. If it's a kid and they see them on the pros on TV and they can identify with them, or and they get taken to a tournament.
How did he hit that shot?
Yeah, or they go to a tournament and the dad, you know, walks them up in the autograph area and Jordan Spieth talks to him for a minute and just says, hey, you know, and the kid's like, oh, I'm just getting into it. Well, keep at it. You know, like that stuff matters. We can't ignore that. So at that, I think that matters. Everything else in pro golf could disappear in the game. I think there's a legitimate argument to make the game would be healthier other than those few things that we lost. I think technology is one example. The fact that the pro game has such a voice in the grounds of the game, the conditioning of the game, the technology we use is just outlandish. Like, it's just...
I think about it. Pro golf, elite golf, anything on TV related to golf is a role model. Like, you know, I don't know. I'm thinking, I am not your role model, Charles Barkley, right? it's false.
But you are, because, like, you're on TV.
You're on TV. You got a stage. People are paying attention. And I think the thing that does matter with all this is that, and this is a, people will try to build golf courses in the vein of what they see on TV. They're going to try to play the game the way that they see it on TV. They're going to, and that's just, you don't need to go to Scotland and see how they play the game. It doesn't look anything like a PGA Tour round. It looks the exact opposite. People are ready golf, letting it fly, playing matches, picking up, you know, and that's just what the game needs to be for a healthier hobby, for a healthier leisure
activity. Walking up to a 3-footer and just putting it right away, right? That's one thing that stands out always in the Scottish game. Like, obviously metal play, like there's selective metal play, it's a little bit different, right? They're scoring their ball and they score their ball in such a healthy, awesome way because they choose to score their ball and then you're scoring your ball. It's in the bottom cup every time. But when they're not doing that, the ball's up to 3 to 4 feet. You walk up and you take a look at it, even if it's for a match play, you take a look and you just try to pop it in.
And here's where people say, like, oh, well, I don't like all this new fandangled team stuff and blah, 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 because that's not how the everyday golfer plays. I actually think about it in completely differently, which is, I almost want pro golf to get so ridiculous, to be so like nobody watches F1.
Can't be replicated.
Does anyone watch F1? You get in your car after watching F1, and I can attest to this. And I kind of do take a turn a little bit differently. Or
on ramps are a lot of fun.
but no part of me says, like, that's equivalent. Do you know what I'm saying? I'm not out there shopping for F1 cars, right? It's like I drive a Subaru Outback and I'm very happy with that. But that's my point. It's like if we enter this new world of elite golf, I hope that it's so different and it's so out there that you're still going to identify with them because they're hitting a golf shot. You know, Lewis Hamilton's still driving a vehicle. But I don't want it to make people think that, like, oh, this is how golf is now, right? Yeah. No, golf is the same Scottish game that happened 700 years ago. Like, stick with that when you're out there playing and having a good time. But this pro thing is, you know, maybe for a kid that's aspiring to be that elite golfer, sure. But for the rest of us, that's just view it differently. It's It's not the same thing. And basketball, every sport, it's that. I can go throw a football in my backyard, but I'm not Tom Brady. And I just hope that golf understands that. The manufacturers need to understand that. The consumer, the people that are watching need to understand it, because that's my only hesitation with all this new stuff is like, is it going to damage the 40 million people playing golf every day in America? I hope not.
Hear.
Yeah, this is good. I thank you, Professor, for your thought and questions. I mean, this is something we've never really kicked around on the show, but and if you're listening and you're like, you guys are idiots and this whole thing, there's a better way, shoot us an email, thebackdrop@newclub.golf. We'll read some of these emails eventually. I got to be more prepared to do that. But for those of you that have sent them to us, we'll read them and discuss some of our maybe apologies for some of the things we've said, which I've already done a couple of times this year on the show. Professor, thank you for the chat. Have a great rest of your weekend, everybody. Enjoy the spring meeting this weekend for those that are attending.
So excited.
Hopefully we got, it's going to be great. It's always a
Lookout
blast.
Lookout Mountain, Black Creek, Suwannee, Sweet's Cove.
Couple people headed over to see what's the Muni in Chattanooga, the Donald Ross.
Yeah, they're going to see. Gosh, I had not much sleep last night. I don't know. We've always talked to Doug Stein and Rob about like it needs redone. My brain's too slow this morning.
The thing I remember about it is it's a Donald Ross. It's scruffy,
yep,
but
it's right off the interstate.
Right off the interstate, it is firm, but. Yeah, thanks everybody for listening. Don't forget to review the show. Thanks to our friends at Titleist for the support of this podcast, for the support of New Club. Check out the new SM10 wedges that the professor is dialing in right now. And we'll catch you all on the next one.
Brainerd,
there it is.
There we go. Nice. Brain slow, but it's still working.